Well, it's quite fantastic because I was just talking about this. We were just talking about it in Forum Measurables. And so here it is yet again. We've talked about what this free of wanting is. That is the non-attachment to outcome, right? So we obviously, we do the activity, but if we can rid ourselves of the attachment or the desire for a specific outcome, we become free of wanting. That's all that means. It's not like, oh, I want a new car. Oh, I shouldn't feel that. No, that has nothing to do with it. We're not talking about that. We're talking about when we get so attached to our activity and a specific outcome of that activity because we really want that to happen. And when it doesn't happen, we're crushed. When it does happen, we attach ourselves to it and we want that again. And so the next time we say, I gotta have it to work out, and this is problematic. Free of harming, we talked about, which was the, of course, harming ourselves first and foremost, and then the harming of others. And I just talked about that a moment ago. Without confusion is recognizing, as we were talking about earlier, this Buddha nature, understanding that it is in all beings everywhere. Rids us of confusion. See, when we think that, oh, that doesn't have it, then we have a us and them. We have myself and that other. And this is problematic. And so confusion here, without confusion, Buddha's referring to devotees that clearly understand the two natures, and know directly the ultimate nature of all of these things. That's what's meant by confusion. And I think we talked about clearly conscious and mindful. She or he abides having suffused the first direction, then second and third, fourth, and so on. Below and across, everywhere and in every way, with a mind dedicated to loving kindness, compassion, goodwill, and equanimity. And this mind, so let's talk about this section right here. So when it says they abide in having suffused with the first direction and all of these directions. When we look at the prayer flags, we have them in the Dharma Center, and you see they're five different colors. These five different colors first represent our defilements. Each color has a very specific, what we call poison, defilement. And so, when we are in a non-enlightened state, a confused state, we behave accordingly to this confused state, and they're not very good ways of thinking or speaking or acting, and this is what's called defiled. So the flags first mean that, but as we begin to hear and study and apply Dharma and begin having realizations, the colors of the flag then represent the five wisdoms. So these five wisdoms transmute or transform the original toxic behavior into a wisdom behavior. Now, to be fair, it would be ridiculous for us to just jump in and do all five wisdoms right off the bat. I'm going to master all five of them. I mean, that's crazy talk. Although new students tend to like that idea, that they're just all of a sudden going to take on 9 million vows and they're going to you know, be the most appropriate practitioner on the planet and all of that. And it lasts for a couple months and then poof, they're out. Because they burn themselves up. So, Buddha says, look, you start with first direction. Now, these colored flags have another meaning. Actually, I mean, they have tons. But the next meaning is they represent specific directions. And so he's actually telling you the way to approach this whole thing. He says, look, pick the first direction. That happens to be a white flag. Well, in the lineage that I'm from, white is the first one. In other lineages, blue's the first one. So the schools switch them. See, blue is our center, and the other school, white, is their center. So we have blue, and we put white in the east first direction. We begin with that. What is it? Ignorance. Start with understanding the two realities. That's where we begin. We begin there so that we can start developing what we call twofold enlightened mind. That is, there is a relative enlightened mind, and then there is an ultimate enlightened mind. And we like to use the Sanskrit to be all fancy about it, which means bodhicitta. And so we have an ultimate bodhicitta, and we have a relative bodhicitta. But I think when we use, you know, the Sanskrit, we might think so highly of ourselves because now we're using some foreign language that we don't actually understand. But I'm talking Buddha language. I'm talking Buddhism language. I'm talking like a devotee. Okay. It's not going to do a lot for you unless you know what you're talking about. So translate it. Buddha says you should do it anyhow. So we translate it. Bodhi means awakened. Citta is the mind. So we're talking about an awakened mind, the enlightened mind, bodhicitta. He says, first start there. Wisdom, which is the white flag, overcomes the toxicity of ignorance, of not understanding the actual nature of things. Both the physical nature of things, like this harmonium, or this table, or this body, or that guy over there, that you can't see on camera because we'd have to turn it around. But what we're looking at is we see the world, or we sense the world through all of our different sense organs, the eyes, the ears, the nose, and so forth. And so this outer data comes into these senses, and then we have an experience of this quote-unquote outer world. And because we don't understand the nature of the outer world, we have assumptions. And if anyone works in an office, you've probably heard what they think of the word assume. Anytime you assume something and it goes wrong, your supervisor comes and says, well, assuming makes an ass out of you and me. Right? We all know what, and it's true. When we assume a nature of something without actually knowing, it doesn't really work out too well. Anybody ever cook with cast iron at all? Or you've been around cast iron? I love the stuff. I think it's the greatest cookware in the world. But if you haven't been the one using it, and you walk up to the stove, how many of us have assumed that that cast iron was ice cold, and we grab the handle, and we get that shock of high heat? You know, you burn yourself because you made an assumption. We do this all the time. There's all kinds of things that we just assume, and then we reach, oh, whoa, right? I'm assuming that I can just take this food right out of a screaming, searing hot pan and put it into my mouth and it'll be fine. And you get it in there and you're, right? And it's burning your tongue or your coffee. I just assume that this exceedingly hot coffee coming out of the pot is good temperature to just drink right now. No need to let it cool down, right? And then you burn your tongue and you get that weird feeling on it for the rest of the day. No one's done that but me? Yeah. It's, you know, we're way too anxious for that coffee. I need it now. You know, and then you end up burning the daylights out of yourself. That's assuming. That's assumption. What that means is we are not paying attention to any nature of outer world. So Buddha says, look, when you assume the nature of something, is this thing real? Is it not real? Are my stories about it what it really is? Or is it something beyond my conceptualization? So this is what we call relative enlightened mind, is working with these relative things. Then there is the actual nature of the self. And so we look at of our own story, what do we call the petty tyrant ego. This petty tyrant ego is built of our own autobiography and mixed or perfumed with elements from biographies that somebody else has given us. And we mash all that together, and then we put it onto the petty tyrant self, and then we think that the petty tyrant self is us. And we're highly confused. Buddha doesn't use the word confusion when he actually spoke. The real word that he actually used, and you know, if you're offended, you can talk to Buddha about it. But he called it stupidity. So the white flag is actually stupidity, and you overcome it by replacing it or transmuting it with wisdom. That's the first direction. It's the first thing that we should do, is work on that. Those students of the Bodhisattva class that we're currently in the midst of, we spend like the first, I don't know how many classes, talking about just this, trying to clarify the two types of enlightened mind, the relative and the ultimate, before we go on to any kind of practice or doing anything, because it's fundamental, understanding the nature of all these things. So we're not going to go through all five of these. That would make a really nice class, but we're not going to do that right now. But he goes through these and he says the above and the below. That's the center. That's that blue one for us. That's the last one that you work on. That fifth direction, and you do so above and below. You work with the higher sense of self, and you work with this lower mundane interacting with everyone else self. And you actually apply all five of these in that way, to these two directions. And when he says across, everywhere, in every way, it means we begin to relate to everything that we come in contact with from the perspective of the wisdoms. He says that's what these devotees do. The follower of the Noble Path trains in all of these things, and then interacts with everything all across the board, no matter what it is, from the perspective of the five wisdoms. And he says, so this mind is dedicated to loving kindness, compassion, goodwill, and equanimity. And it's abundant, expansive, and immeasurable, kindly and free of harming. Because if our central motivation, our central focus, our central thought process is based on these five wisdoms. It will not be possible for you to do that without developing this bacteria of compassion, this illness of loving kindness. You see, it's like an infection, because the minute you start working on these, that little tiny germ of compassion and loving kindness weasels its way in. And then it gets into the bloodstream. And then it starts to turn all of our veins like this golden color. Because it starts to replace all the blood with all this amrita, all of this sense of blessing. And then that gets into the muscle. And then it starts to get into the skin. And it starts to get all over us. You know, kind of like when you watch one of those zombie movies, right? Somebody gets bit. And, oh, it's okay, it's a small bite. And then they're not looking too good the next day. And they kind of, you know, digress into this thing. And the next thing you know, they jump up and they're trying to eat you. This is what happens with compassion and loving kindness when we actually follow the path. We turn into these loving kindness, amrita, gooey, loving monsters that run around slathering blessings on everything that we see. So for those that don't like blessings and kindness and happiness and all of that, we're horrible. We're absolutely toxic to them. We're toxic to our old self, because our old self goes, "Ew, you're not supposed to like them." And we go, "Ugh. But they're a manifestation of the very thing I love." And your inner self goes, "That's horrible. Don't know. Look at what they're doing. They behave so terrible." And then you go, "Oh, but yes. Maybe so, because they're slightly confused. But look at how fantastic they are. They're going to become very soon the most glorious, fantastic Buddhist." And they already are, if I could just see clearly. Because everything's already perfect. You see, that's horrible. That's a really a terrible way to be if you like, you know, the constant judging and the constant conflict, and you're into high drama. It's terrible. But the Buddha says, look, they have this equanimity. They have this evenness. Equanimity, really, like for the slang of today, is a, they have a zero drama mind. And we're not talking about the ones that go, "I hate drama," but they are walking drama. We're not talking about them. We're talking about the ones that, you know, and you've seen them, you go, "Oh, you see how that person does that?" And the person responds, "Oh, but they're so lovely." And you go, "Don't poop on my parade of slandering them. I'm trying to make them negative." And the person goes, "Oh, yeah, but they just smell like roses every time they walk by." You know what I'm talking about? "Oh, their hair is so beautiful. I love it." And you go, "I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about their reports that they're supposed to turn in are horrible. They're full of typos." And the person goes, "Yeah, but I would just love to go to a movie or out to dinner with them because they're so pleasant to talk to." And you're like, why are you ruining my parade? You see, you turn into that. That infection takes over. Buddha says, it's everywhere. And it's abundant, which means it doesn't run out. Expansive, it covers everything. Everything. You see those people, "Ah, I can't stand that tree. I wish that person would cut it down. Such a terrible tree in their yard. But then the follower of the path goes, oh, but it's so magnificent. I mean, what tree looks like this? There's no other tree anywhere that looks like this tree. It's so fantastic, so unique. And we have this experience of getting able to come in contact with it. And then you say, dude, I was trying to make a point that it's ugly and we should cut it down. And here you are talking about it, some kind of great thing of being unique. They're not going to cut it down if you tell them that. It's expansive. It's everywhere. It covers everything. Immeasurable. The depth of this. The more that they practice and study these five principles, the more it just overflows. And it is kindly and free of harming. Because as you begin to perceive everything, seen and unseen from the point of view of these five wisdoms, it is not possible to harbor ill will. That makes you kindly. Because you cannot harbor ill will, it's not possible for you to create violence towards it. So you're free of harming. And he says, having practiced this way, those who do this, they are kindly and free of harming, their mind is no longer defiled, is completely purified. In other words, they have attained the state that we all wish. That deep happiness. And so our world also changes. The outer world, it really does change. I mean, you're still going to have stuff. But the meaning of this stuff, when you look at it, it doesn't look like it used to, and you can't undo your new vision. You look and you go, wow, this thing is, I mean, look at how enlightenment decides to manifest in this form. It's incredible. Who would have thought that consciousness could become this? Which really strange is this can't become without consciousness. It won't exist. That's Yogacaran school, mind only. Alright, I said I wouldn't talk long, and look what happened. I'm telling you, the more that you become good friends with this, your friendship with these wisdoms, these five wisdoms, pervades everything. And the more that it pervades, and the more that your mind thinks on it, you're no longer friends. You start dating. And then the dating turns into this more serious thing. You know, you're starting to think, I'm going to propose. You know, it gets heavy. And then you do propose. And so now, you're in this new thing. You're no longer dating. You're now engaged. What is it, betrothed? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're now betrothed with this loving kindness and this compassion and these five wisdoms. And so now you're just, you know, all gooey and cuddly with it. And then comes the big day, where once you marry into it, that's it. It's all done. Because now you have the direct immediate experience of knowing. That makes it hard to not talk about it when somebody says, hey, can you talk about Dharma today? So that's why I ramble on sometimes. And half the time I'm just talking to me anyhow. Because all these Dharma talks are really great reminders for me to remember what it is that I'm doing. Okay, we don't have enough time to do our mantra and our our sitting meditation and all of that, but you have a different, unique practice today that I want you guys in Missouri to try. And that is, if I'm not mistaken, you guys are going to do some work on beautifying the Dharma Center. Is that correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's your practice for today. You know what the beautification is going to do. You're putting in the effort and the work to turn it into this thing. This is exactly like your practice. You're going to put in the effort and the labor in order to see the beauty that's actually already there. You're attempting to uncover it. See, we have this weird idea that when we paint, we're covering up something. We're not covering up anything. What we're doing is we're bringing out, we're uncovering the beauty of the object. A great artist that I was able to listen to one time, a fantastic sculptor, said that, quoting another great sculptor, and he said that when he sets that chunk of marble in front of him and he takes out his tools, he sees inside of it the thing that's in there. And all he's actually doing is uncovering it. He creates nothing. He says, I don't create any images at all. All I do is I remove all of the stuff off of it so we can see what's in it. Because there's already this precious object inside this big chunk of marble. All I'm doing is removing the fluff. And then it's there. So he says, I tap here and I go, oh, wow, look at that. There's a thing in there. I'll tap some more. I'll tap some more. I'll tap some over here. And then all of a sudden, there it is. So is your enlightenment. It's in you already. And as you beautify a building, you will uncover the glory of this building. And you should think to yourself, as you're painting, I am uncovering with effort and work and diligence. And as I uncover this, I uncover those things in my mind. I do my practice in the same way that I uncover the fluff to see this great nature, this loving kindness and the peace and compassionate monster that is in me. That's your meditation. Do your best to not talk too much. I know, you know, you get together and you want to like have fellowship. Use this opportunity. I mean, talk about technical things that you need to. But try to work in a mindful, quiet way, contemplating this. You're going to do stuff and go, wow, this looks so much better. Look what we uncovered. Use this as your meditation today. So yeah, let's get to our closing dedication to prayers so that you guys can get yourselves ready.